The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. Coming up, I'll be talking with Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet at the University of Illinois. He is one of the principal organizers of the 2012 Docha Festival. That's Downtown Champaign Chamber Music Festival, which opened on Friday and continues with a final concert tonight at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Champaign. We'll be hearing a preview of that, hearing about tonight's concert. But first, I'll be talking with two people involved in a MillerCom lecture demonstration for the Center for Advanced Study at the University of Illinois. It's going to take place at the Spurlock Museum on the U of I campus in Urbana this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and it features an instrument variously called the Eurasian Angular Harp, or in Japanese, the kugo, with Tomoko Sugawara and Bo Lavergren, who's of Hunter College at City University in New York. Stay tuned to hear that rather unusual instrument on Live and Local. My guests on this portion of Live and Local are Bo Lavergren, who is a professor emeritus in the Department of Physics at Hunter College at the City University of New York, and also Tomoko Sugawara, who is an artist on an instrument that is variously called the kugo or the angular harp. For the advertisements for the event that we're talking about, they refer to it as the Eurasian angular harp. And this is, they're going to be presenting together kind of a lecture demonstration on the MillerCom series at the Center for Advanced Study at the University of Illinois. It's going to be this afternoon at 4 o'clock in Knight Auditorium in the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory Avenue on the U of I campus in Urbana. And I'm pleased to welcome both of them on the show. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So I'll direct the first question to Professor Lavergren. How is it that somebody in the Department of Physics, or formerly of the Department of Physics, got hooked up with something like this Asian harp, Eurasian harp?
Well, it wasn't the harp in itself that turned me on, but ancient music and very ancient music, the thing that you find in archaeological digs. Music doesn't go back very far because we didn't have notation very long ago. But musical instruments you can trace back very far. 40,000 BC, the latest...
40,000, you
40,
said?
40,000 BC, or maybe I should say 35,000 BC. So in the earliest phases of the Stone Age in southern Germany, they have found flutes that are made of the bones in a bird's wing. And from there on, one can conduct music archaeology. So that's what I was, what I've been doing a lot. Now, the reason why I went into that is because when I was very young, a teenager, I liked to compose music and I played a cello. But then the Sputnik went up and people advised me, if you're at all interested in science, take that. So it became a life of science, but I'm not returning to music.
So the study of music or the interest in these in ancient music especially post-dated your time in the Department of Physics.
Yes, yes.
Or predated yes. And post-dated
yes.
Somehow or
yes.
Another. What got you? I mean, why the old music though? Why not? I mean, not everybody who started playing the cello decides to get interested in.
Yeah. I was born in Sweden, on a little island in the Baltic Sea, which is full of antiquities. So I became very interested in that. And I found archaeologists fascinating to talk to. And also I realized that it involved traveling to interesting countries like Greece, Italy, Egypt, Asia, China, Japan. And that also had a certain attraction, I must say.
The travel aspect, sure.
Yes,
no,
yes.
That's a wonderful thing. And how did you get acquainted with Ms. Sugawara?
We met in Japan. I had gone to give a paper in musical acoustics, so not music archaeology, because I had worked on the world's earliest trumpet. And then I published it, how it looked and how it was worked and how it was used and what material. And then I realized maybe I should do something about the acoustics too. Why does it work? And because it's very unusual. It's a very small trumpet, maybe 4 inches long, and often made of gold and silver and precious metals found in Iran and the region north of Iran. I worked out the acoustics of it and went to a conference in the city of Nara, which is in Japan. And I think we had a friend in common who lived in Korea. And I had told that Korean person that I'm going to Nara in April or whatever it was. And she knew Tomoko, so she called Tomoko. And we met in one of the most famous museums, famous unknown museums, I should say, the Shosuin Museum. Have you heard of that?
No.
See, it is famous to us,
but
unknown
never,
for most
people.
But
I've never been to Japan.
Okay, right. But it is famous because it was probably the first museum ever started in the world. It wasn't meant to be a museum, but a treasure house where the royal family would put down their most precious things, and then they put it down there and they locked it up. No one is allowed to walk in and see it, except it's aired once a year. Some objects are taken over and put into a normal museum in Nara. It was started 752, so you can imagine it's the world's oldest.
Not quite as old as some of the 35,000-year-old instruments, but...
No, that's true.
But,
for example, there were no museums in Egypt, although there was, of course, products in Egypt that are much older. So this was really meant to be a place where you can hoard ancient, precious stuff and try to preserve it for the rest of the ages.
And the harp that, did you see Tomoko playing this instrument at
the time you visited? No, I had never met Tomoko before this. And we were not allowed to go into the museum either because they don't allow anyone to go in except for the staff that works there. So we met in a staff room outside, and there was a collection of Japanese people. I was the American, and there was no one else, right? And you had heard, because the Japanese television station had come there to ask me some questions about the Silk Road, music on the Silk Road. So that's how it was set up. And Tomoko came along, and she told me that she plays this instrument, that actually they have copies or the originals inside the Shosuin Museum, two of them. But unfortunately, they're partial. The tops don't exist, but the bottom part. So the bottom part exists in the Shosuin Museum. The top has disappeared. But we have many pictures of the instrument.
And it's actually a little difficult to describe in words. If you think of your typical image of a harp, it won't really pertain much here, except that the you can sort of see what a typical array of strings that go from fairly short to much longer compared to your average Western concert harp. But it looks to me like maybe at most half the length overall of a typical concert harp. And it sort of looks like maybe part of the top of a concert harp or a pedal harp, as it's sometimes called, and then there's no bottom to it. It's just attached to what is the thing made of that the strings attach to?
Well, this is the same as the black keys on a piano, ebony, I guess it's called, right?
I don't know. What is it made of? Is it ebony?
This is ebony.
Yeah. South American wood, very strong.
Strong, hard wood.
Yeah. And what about the rest of the harp, which is actually the beautiful part? It's a beautiful reddish, dark wood, rich wood on the outside, and then much lighter on the inside.
It's painted red, so it looks beautiful, but it's kind of a blonde wood. I think it's a cypress or something like this. And this is probably like a violin top. It's a fir or a fir wood of some kind.
And Tomoko, I understand you play many different kinds of harps, but your first one was an Irish harp,
yes,
of all things.
Yes.
How common is the Irish harp in Japan?
There is one harp teacher near my house, so it's coincidence to start the harp.
And she happened to play the Irish harp, which was a much smaller harp than
usual
concert harp.
I started to playing the Irish harp at 12 years old.
Three.
Twelve.
12 years old,
yes,
yeah, sorry.
12 years old. And after that, I studied the concert harp at the age 16. I played solo piece, chamber music piece, and also in orchestra I played. And 20 years ago, around 20 years ago, I knew that instrument, this kugo, because about I have to say also about shosoin. I learned that the shosoin had an ancient harp. I didn't know, so I thought harp was played only in Western country, so I believed. So I was so surprised because East Asia had its own harp. So I was so surprised. So I wanted, it became my dream to play the Kugo.
Kugo. Mm. And this is the, and you first encountered, you heard that the place, the museum that Bo was talking about.
Mm. That time
is where you learned
I
about.
Already played. And because my friend who lives in Japan, he made a replica. So I borrowed and I put strings on it and string and I choose, select the strings and some of them, it was very difficult job. So sometimes it was too strong and it's too loose and too thick and too thin. It was so difficult, but I learned that time. I learned a lot.
Well, before we talk any more about it, let's hear what the thing sounds like. We've been talking about this kugo, or sometimes called an angular harp.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit. Tomoko Sugawara playing an instrument called the kugo, or angular harp, here live on Live and Local. She and Bo Lavergren of formerly of Hunter College in New York are going to be presenting this instrument and a bit about it and more this evening, this afternoon rather, at 4 o'clock at Spurlock Museum on the University of Illinois campus. It's the one of the MillerCom. Lecture demonstrations in this case for the Center for Advanced Study at the University of Illinois. Was that an old composition or a newer composition?
Actually, this is a new composition.
By you?
No, Iranian composer.
But a contemporary Iranian composer.
Yes.
How do you? Well, actually, which we should say, you said that you were. Surprised to find that there was such a thing as an Asian harp, but it didn't make its way to Asia immediately. It started somewhere in Mesopotamia, in the Middle East somewhere?
Yes.
1900 or so B.C.?
Also, yes, and also in Spain, kugo was played sometime.
Was or is?
Was. In the 13th century.
Yes. Yeah.
B.C. or?
No.
A.D.
A.D., yeah. How do we know, how do you know, how this thing was played? I mean, is it obvious that from the shape of it, that if you attach strings the way you've attached them, that it makes these sounds, and then you just play it the way you would
yes.
A regular
it's also,
harp?
Yes. one way, and also we both know, I learned many historical
So there are plenty of illustrations of the harp, and it's not just hanging on a wall, it's played. So you can see how they hold their hands and the fingers. For example, the playing position can be quite different. You can sit on the floor sometimes, sometimes on a chair, sometimes walking. Like that. So they, we can see all these possibilities. May I talk a little bit more about the history? Mesopotamia is, of course, part of Asia, so it's Near East. So it was nearly entirely an Asian instrument, starting off in Western Asia, Mesopotamia, and then spreading to Eastern Asia, China and Japan, but also down to ancient Egypt. And it came into Europe very peripherally, only into ancient Greece, which is now by accident is called Europe. But it was part of the old world like this. And then how did it get to Spain? Well, it's not a mystery anymore because we know that Spain was conquered by Arabic forces. And the Arabic people had adopted this harp when they conquered Iran, because Mesopotamia and Iran are very close. So it was one of the great instruments of Iran when the Muslim forces came in there in the 7th century, 7th, 8th century. So they quickly adopted the instrument and made it their own. And they brought it to Spain because they also conquered Spain in the 7th century, no, 8th century, sorry. And they stayed there for 800 years in Spain before they were they retreated back to North Africa. So they brought the harp to Spain. And we know that because there are illustrations of this instrument in Spanish books from about 1250.
And the illustrations from various times, whether it's way back in Mesopotamia, 1900 BC, or much more recent times, did the instrument come in various shapes and sizes, or mostly of the sort that I wish we had a picture to show you here on the radio? But
well, the listeners can come, and because exactly. I'm going to show a lot of slides, and I will show you the very first things from Mesopotamia. It came in this way, which we call the vertical harp, right? Because the strings are vertical, but also horizontal. The more or less the same instrument was played lying down like this. And I'll show pictures of that too. Now, at first I used to think, oh, it's the same instrument, just turned two ways. Like you can probably do a guitar, playing a guitar this way or whatever. But it wasn't, it was slightly different. That the horizontal harp had fewer strings and the vertical harp had quite a lot, like up, this is 25 strings, right? And they had 25 strings from the beginning, 1900 BC. And you can say, how do you know that? Well, I have pictures, but pictures you cannot trust when it comes to strings, because it was very boring to draw pictures or to model them in clay. But we know from ancient Egypt that they had over 20 strings, because there the instruments survived completely, the strings survived. You can see all the holes where the strings are supposed to be attached, count them, and they're over 20. And this was in Egypt, was a time about 1200 BC. It's quite amazing to have an instrument with over 20 strings that far way back, because there was probably no harmony at that time. Most people doubt if they played chords. So why would it need so many strings? It's many, many enigmas when it comes to ancient music.
Well, most of the pictures of older harps that I've seen do have just a small number of strings. Do you have an example, Tomoko, of music that would be older? I imagine it's difficult to have much idea of what sort of music was actually played long, long, long time ago. But I know you have a CD out from 2010 called Along the Silk Road, and you have some older music and some newer music. Mm-hmm. So you played us something a moment ago by a contemporary Iranian composer. Do you have an example of something that would be much older?
The next piece that Tomoko is going to play is called Kaval. It's from Iran. It, as it happens, it's the earliest piece we know from a Muslim culture, 1300.
Okay. Well, we'd be pleased to hear it. It's Tomoko Sugawara on the kugo, or angular harp, which she'll be demonstrating publicly this afternoon at 4 o'clock on the University of Illinois campus. So that's a bit of a shortened version of this already fairly short piece, Kaval, which actually transliterated spelling Q-A-W-L. And this is a piece that you can find on Tomoko's CD called Along the Silk Road, which is on iTunes, by the way. I found it that way. And she will be giving a lecture demonstration this afternoon at 4 with Bo Lavergren, both of them my guests here on Live and Local. So you said this is the oldest piece from Iran that we know of. In what form does it exist? I mean, how do you know that this is what it sounds like? It was probably not in what we would call Western musical notation.
Shall I answer that? It only is known as a song with words underneath, but also with a percussion line, very complicated percussion lines, very, very fast beating like that. But the reason why we feel justified to play it without song and on a harp is because we have very many illustrations in Islamic art where we see a group of musicians, nearly always a harp of this type, a flute and a frame drum, sometimes a lute, and a singer. So the harp is very likely to have played this song, even if it was only the only line notated is a songer's line. And this kind of music was heterophonic in the sense that all instruments played the same tune. There was no harmonies there, but it was very complicated rhythms from the percussion. And then all instruments chipped in. They may have taken turn. I have the tune now, you take the tune later on, but there was no harmony. So we feel that the harp would have taken that tune sometimes.
And I know on the CD, some of the tunes do have some drumming going on. There's also what sounds to me like a newer piece that has a flute also on your recording. Is that a more contemporary composition?
Yes.
With the flute?
Yes.
And is that one we're going to hear a sample of next, or a different piece?
Yes, it is composed by Japanese composer.
Yeah, the next piece is by
Kikuko Masumoto.
Yeah, yes. So we're not hearing the flute piece because we have no flute here.
You mean you're not going to jump in and play the flute with her?
We actually had a very famous flutist playing there.
Oh, yeah?
And, yeah.
So, Robert Dick is his name.
He invented harmonics on the flute.
Oh, wow.
And he can play big chords, big fat chords on one single flute.
So is this the piece we're going to hear? Was this written for you?
Yes.
So you have gotten into the habit now of commissioning music for the Kugo.
Yes.
And these are pieces that, as far as you know, is anybody else playing this instrument these days?
There are some people in Japan, but they only play contemporary. They have not discovered the ancient literature yet. And they are playing very strange tunings and quite different. Yeah.
So we will hear a sample. And tell us the composer's name again and the name of the piece.
Title is Archaic Phrase, and composer is Japanese composer Kikuko Masumoto.
And played by Tomoko Sugawara here on Live and Local. So that's a shortened version of a piece by Kikuko Masumoto called simply Archaic Phrase for the instrument called the Kugo, performed here by Tomoko Sugawara. And if you would like to know, have a much better idea of what this instrument looks like than we were able to describe it for you, since this is a radio program after all, you have a couple of options. You can certainly look it up on the internet, K-U-G-O, or better yet, you can go see her play the instrument at 4 o'clock this afternoon at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. And she will be giving the demonstration part, and Bo Lavergren will, formerly of Hunter College, he was then in the Department of Physics, and now he's exploring things musical, will be giving the lecture portion of things, and it's presented by the University of Illinois Center for Advanced Study, MillerCom 2012, the Eurasian Angular Harp, Crossing Cultures, Ancient to Modern. And I'm very grateful to both of you for coming in and introducing us to an instrument that I have certainly never seen or heard before myself, and I imagine that's true for probably all of our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's the final movement of the 23rd String Quartet by Joseph Haydn, his Opus 20, number 5 in F minor. That is one of the pieces that will be on tonight's program at the Docha Festival, which is downtown Champaign Chamber Music Festival from faculty and students at the University of Illinois. It's going to be happening at the Orpheum Theater, or Orpheum Children's Science Museum, the theater in the back of that building. And the festival opened on Friday with the first full concert on Saturday night. There was one on Sunday night, skipped last night, and tonight is the final one, 7 o'clock. We'll have more details on that in just a moment from Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet and one of the principal organizers of the Docha Festival. Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible in part by a grant from St. Joseph Apothecary in St. Joseph, a full-service pharmacy specializing in compounding medications to meet individual patient needs. St. Joseph Apothecary invites you to join them in supporting WYLL. Tonight at 7 o'clock on the evening concert, it's the New York Philharmonic This Week. David Zinman guest conducts the first of three concerts from the Philharmonic Festival, the Modern Beethoven, with Beethoven's Second and Seventh Symphonies, and Peter Serkin as the piano soloist in Stravinsky's Capriccio for Piano and Orchestra. It's the New York Philharmonic This Week, tonight at 7 o'clock on the evening concert on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Masumi Rostad is a violist with the Pacifica Quartet. He's also on faculty at the University of Illinois. And as I said, one of the principal organizers of Docha Festival, which is now in its third season. We heard a bit of a preview of the whole thing when we met with Sally Bernhardtson on Friday. I guess she was on the show. With Rudolf Hocken, and I understand, Masumi, you've had some nice crowds these first concerts so far.
Yeah, it's been really wonderful. We never really know what to expect because we don't have tickets, and we don't charge admission, so we don't know who's going to show up or really just what kind of numbers we're going to be looking at, but it's been really fantastic, and we've had some pretty full houses.
I have always thought of chamber music as a small audience sort of element of the classical world. And that's probably a narrow view, but say if you go to the Krannert Center, it seems true that a chamber music concert will have fewer people there than an orchestral concert, for example.
Yeah, I think, this is one of my theories about chamber music in general, is that it tends to be your most experienced audience, because it's a very kind of active listening that's required generally of the audience, because you have to throw your ear onto the stage and throw yourself onto the stage and be part of the ensemble, often with bigger ensembles like a symphony orchestra or something like that. You'll be able to sit back and everything will come to you. But It's true that, chamber music was originally intended to be played in the chambers of a house, in the rooms of a house, and very intimately just among friends. And it's evolved, I think, into a performance medium. And we've modernized our instruments so that they're louder in the last 150 years or so, and have changed the focus towards performing out into a hall. But one of the great things about the Orpheum Theater where we're performing is that it's just a beautiful sounding space. It's a beautiful looking space as well. And it's so easy to play very quietly in there, and everybody can hear everything.
And it's not huge. I mean, I imagine if you filled the place with chairs, it would sit maybe 500-600 people, something like that.
Yeah, I think you might even be able to get more, maybe along the lines of 700. It's strange because it's deceptively, it's deceiving because you think that you can get, you've got a lot of people in there, but then once you actually see them, it looks like a small number.
Well, contrast that to, say, the Virginia Theater, which is 1,500,
yeah,
or the Krannert Center Great Hall, which I think is around 2,000.
That's right.
So that's the significant. Compared to those, it feels like a chamber hall.
That's right. And I think most people have not been into the Orpheum because it's only recently been renovated, and it has not been used as a performance space in a very long time. And now it's coming back into usage, and I really love the space. I think it's such a gem for Champagne. It's beautiful, it sounds great, and it's a flexible space. There are no fixed seats, so we have a lot of options for how we can set up the stage, how we can set up seating, how we can light the place also.
I haven't actually been in this space since last year's Stocha Festival. Have things progressed there? Is there more lighting? Is there?
Yeah. Well, we learned a lot from last year's festival. There were, it was the first time that we were in the Orpheum, and it was the first time that we were putting on longer performances more full blown performances. But in general, the goal of our performances is to be less than 90 minutes, and we have an MC, and we've figured out a very good flow this year. We learned, like I said, we learned a lot from last year. And in terms of lighting, we were able to figure out a couple of different things to use the space as well as we could. It's very interesting this year. We've got up lights on the columns, and they're slowly changing color. And I think it's really cool. I think it's kind of magical in that space.
What is an up light?
Lights that point upwards.
Literally,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So that it's more diffuse lighting than if you had shining down.
We do have stage lights on the stage, of course. This is more ambient light that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So
the piece that I played to open things up, Haydn Quartet. I actually think I forgot to say who played it in that recording was the Kodály Quartet. But you're going to have on tonight's concert at 7 the graduate quartet at the university that's called itself the Anasazi Quartet.
Yeah, that's right. And we're very proud of the Anasazi Quartet because they just won first prize at the MTNA string competition in New York City.
What is MTNA?
I think that's Music Teachers National Association.
Well, congratulations to
them. I hope I'm right on that. But yes, really congratulations to them. They worked very hard, and they're sounding really great. And you should come hear them tonight.
Yeah, you should come hear them, yeah. I mean, especially when it's a free concert. So they'll, of course, be doing the entire quartet, of which we play just the finale. The concert opens with something a little unusual, a solo sonata by George Crumb, which will be played by one of the two faculty cellists at the School of Music at the U of I, Dmitry Kuzov. Thought I'd give listeners just a little bit of a sample here. In fact, we have a recording. I was actually surprised to find we had a recording of this piece at all, and it happens to be one that featured a former faculty member here at the university, Suren Bagratuni. This is the opening portion of called a Fantasia from the Sonata for Solo Cello by George Crumb, which was written in 1955. Thank you. That's the opening fantasia from the Sonata for Solo Cello by George Crumb, and played here by Suren Bagratuni, who is a former faculty member at the University of Illinois. It will be played by one of the two present faculty cellists at the university, Dmitry Kuzov, on tonight's concert at the Docha Festival. Final concert of the festival at the Orpheum Theater downtown Champaign starts at 7 o'clock, and it's free. And actually, when I say he's one of the two faculty cellists, the other being Brandon Vamos, almost forgot his name, and my guest on this portion of Live and Local, who is Masumi Rostad, who is half of the viola faculty, along with Rudolf Hocken at the university. Many listeners will know that the Pacifica Quartet, of which you both are a part, are going to Indiana University in the fall. And you're so involved in the Docha Festival, it raises the question, what's going to happen to Docha in 2013?
Well, we have every intention of continuing the festival. We're trying to figure out the details of a succession plan right now, but this is not about any one person. You know, the festival is a celebration of the community that we have here, and it's a community project, and so many people from all aspects of the musical community here in Champaign have been involved in Docha, and I think for that reason it makes every bit of sense to continue and to continue experimenting with how we can celebrate what's going on here. It's been just such a treat to see how everyone has really just contributed so much to make these performances happen.
And that includes, obviously, people involved with the venues. The performances are given almost exclusively by faculty and students at the university, so it's definitely a vehicle for people at the School of Music to perform anyway.
That's right. But we've also had musicians from outside, from the greater community as well. And, this year, it is exclusively School of Music, faculty and students, but that's not what we're necessarily about. I mean, I think it's been just kind of a circumstantial thing this year, but the aim is to include everybody and to celebrate Champaign-Urbana.
And of course, once you have the succession plan in place, what the festival becomes will be up to the people who are succeeding.
That's right. And one of the great things about the festival in general has been how flexible it is and how many different kinds of projects we've been able to explore. So that's the open-endedness of it is what really will help it continue, I think.
Well, and Pacifica is leaving, but Dmitry is not leaving, Rudolf Hocken is not leaving, Stefan Milankovic is not leaving, all these other faculty members who are involved as well. They're not going anywhere, to the best of our knowledge.
That's right. That's right.
I shouldn't even say something like that publicly. Yeah. So it's not like everybody's going away. Many of the other people who've been integrally involved are still going to be around. Well, it's a wonderful thing you all started 3 years ago, or I guess 2 years ago. This is the third season for it. And I'm delighted to know that the audiences are coming out in droves.
That's right.
Or relative droves.
We're really happy to see that.
Yeah, I'm sure. And appreciate your coming in and giving us a little intro to, or at least talking with me in advance of this final concert, 7 o'clock tonight, Program 3, the last one of the 2012 Docha Festival. And in a moment, we'll have some music from the final piece on the program. Well, not quite the final piece on the program.
Yes, we've got a little surprise at the end, which we will announce at the end of the
end.
Performance, so you've got to wait for it.
Well, this year you did something you haven't done in years past, which is you did actually publish the programs that you can find on the website.
Yes, that's right. We just decided to do that. It kind of cleared up a lot of confusion as to actually when the concerts were ending. It helped people time their bathroom breaks, things like that. So, made sense for us to publish the programs. But we waited until Saturday morning.
Yeah, so there's still more than a little bit of suspense. And now we've just created suspense to find what's going to happen besides George Crumb, Joseph Haydn, and Dmitry Shostakovich, whose music we'll hear in just a moment.
That's right.
Always exciting at the Docha Festival in
That's
downtown Champaign. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana. with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the series collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. I have about a minute to mention some other events that are happening in our listening area over the next couple of days. The University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is actually performing tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Eastern Illinois University's Percussion Ensemble is performing at the Dowden of Fine Arts Center in Charleston. That's also at 7:30. Morgan Powell's Traditional Jazz Orchestra is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5. In Bloomington, it's a concert by the Illinois Wesleyan University Jazz Band at Westbrook Auditorium. Celtic Woman Believe Tour is at the Assembly Hall tonight at 7:30. That's on the University of Illinois campus, on the Champaign side of that campus. The Department of Theater at the University of Illinois is presenting Lady Macbeth, a kabuki play directed by Shozo Sato, who's returned as guest director at the Krannert Center tomorrow through Saturday, 7:30 performances. Lawrence Hobgood, pianist, who was on our show yesterday, is with tenor sax player Ernie Watts for two shows tomorrow night at the Iron Post, 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock. And going back to Illinois Wesleyan, a couple of programs. The Gamelan Ensemble there is giving a concert tomorrow evening at 6 and in Westbrook Auditorium. And the theater department presenting a show called Promenade in the McPherson Theater, Wednesday through Saturday, those shows at 8 o'clock. Those are just some of the things going on in our listening area these couple of days. The Piano Trio No. 2 by Dmitri Shostakovich. It's, if you're going to hear a trio by Shostakovich, this is probably the one. The earlier one is quite early and much shorter. Here's the second movement. It'll be played on tonight's Docha concert by Sibi Bernhardsen, Patricia Likos, and Yuchi Tai on violin, cello, and piano, respectively. In this case, we're hearing members of the Nash Ensemble here on Live and Local.